Friday the 13th, November 2015. It's Watt from Pedro's Show. Scott from Pedro Show. Hey, everybody, I'm back from tour. Yeah, I did do a show in between the last two, the Cuz and Tab Falco. Anyway, start off the show with Tad's Delight, John Coltrane with Miles Davis, and then Andy Moore, solo guitar in Paris, live. I don't know the title of that. I got to talk to Andy in between the Cuz and Tab Falco tours, October 7th, 2015, via Skype. It was right before I went to, just get home from Texas, from Austin. Tomorrow I go play in Tacoma. It's been a lot of bounce around for what? Not like it's the B-word burden, it's the O-word opportunity, believe me, people. But let's get in on this interview with Andy Moore, Dogface Hermans and the X. Credible cat, credible musical story. Though not in real time, I did it like it was real time. Good man. Brother Andy Moore. Andy, what's your earliest music memory?
My earliest music memory? Wow. Probably my mother singing opera at home, because she was an opera singer.
Ah, okay.
And she used to play this record, Madame Butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over again. She always called me into the room at the moment when she's going to die, and she would say, listen to this bit, and I was like very small, and it just seemed very intense and heavy and sad and tragic.
I remember it
really strong. I must have been like 3 or 4 or something.
And where was this?
In London.
Okay. 3 or 4 years old, that's a kind of a big dose of drama to take.
I know, I thought so as well. I thought it was quite, not exactly a light opera either. But I never forgot it, so that I guess it had a good effect.
It's a guy dressed in as a woman, right?
Yeah, that's it.
And mistaken love.
I hardly followed the story. I'm not really into opera.
Okay.
Strangely enough.
Okay, was she the only music one in the family?
Pretty much. She was really into music, actually. I mean, classical music. And so she was kind of happy when I started really playing seriously.
Yeah, because I was wondering, was there instruments in the house?
Piano. So, she also, when she sang, she played For Elisa and, all these sort of classical pieces. And that was always there, really from the, so I was always playing the piano also. I was very young, and I always kept my foot on the pedal that makes it sound like it has reverb. You know that?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called. And she would always shout to me to take my foot off the pedal.
Is this your ma or the teacher?
My mother. I didn't have any lessons.
Ah, you were taught by your ma.
No, I just taught myself. I just went there and played. I wasn't.
Okay, self-taught.
And I wasn't teaching myself. I was just playing. It was, for me, it was like fun, and it sounded great. It was like a toy.
No, I mean, so that's great. I mean, I've had interviews with people who were forced to play piano as a kid with a mean teacher, and it turned them off big time.
That's for sure. I had that more at school with a violin.
Okay, I'm going to get to that. So you start going to school, and they have a music option for you, huh?
Well, it was obligatory.
Oh, you had to play some kind of instrument. Okay.
Yeah. Recorder and violin.
Yes.
Sort of torture.
Recorder, like the kind of flute thing.
Yeah.
And then
what do you call it in the States?
I think they call recorders too.
In Holland they call it the block flute.
Block flute.
Which is what it does. It blocks you for life.
Yeah. Right. How old were you when you had to do this block flute and violin?
Probably from the age of like 6 to 10 or something,
Okay, so grade school.
Yeah. Okay. And then I was in the States. I lived in the States for a couple of years. We moved to Minneapolis.
Well, and, cold part.
Sorry?
A cold part in the winter.
Yeah, it was incredible. 40 below there.
But it's a great place. I like playing up there all the time. Well, man, there's even more cold, right? Duluth.
Yeah.
But, okay, so how long did you live there?
2 years.
Okay, so did you go to school like junior high or something?
Yeah, yeah. That was quite hard actually for me because I had a really strong English accent.
Yeah.
So I was a kind of target for guys wanting to fight with me because they thought I had a kind of. They thought my accent was like really. They thought it was English firstly, which is weird, and they made fun of it. So I just ended up fighting a lot with kids.
I'm so sorry. On behalf of the country, I apologize.
I still love America.
did you do any playing there? By this time, you were done with the violin and the block flute?
I can't remember there being much music involved in my when I was in America. I think my mom was still. She gave up her opera singing career in England to move to the States to follow her husband, who was my stepfather.
Okay.
So that was kind of a shame that she gave that up because she didn't do it in the States.
Dang.
So, yeah, and basically I didn't really stop playing music till we left the States and came back to live in England.
Is this when you pick up the guitar?
Yeah, and I actually, again, my mother was instrumental because... Instrumental.
Fundamental.
Yeah. She had a Spanish classical guitar.
Yeah, and she had to, string.
Yeah, and she had to give it up because she became an acupuncturist. And when you do acupuncture, you read people's pulses to test their health.
Yeah.
So your fingertips have to be super sensitive.
Ah, no calluses.
So you can't play guitar anymore. So
right.
I said, "Can I have the guitar?" And she said, "Yeah." And actually, that's really how I started. I just took it in my bedroom and just played it in my bedroom for a couple of years, just playing chords and stuff. Again, like just taught myself and like played along to Led Zeppelin.
Records. Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you try to copy songs off records? That's how me and
sure.
Boone learned. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix, that kind of stuff.
And this is back in England.
Yeah, back in England, I was about 15, maybe 15 or 16.
So starting high school.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember your first band?
Yeah. It was called Absolute Zero.
Okay.
I'm really ashamed because actually in that band I sang and I had an electric guitar, but I couldn't play it well enough yet, so I just held it on stage but not plugged in.
Ah, so it's kind of a, yeah, confidence thing.
It was like a prop.
Yeah, or what do they call it? We call them pacifiers. Oh, you call them dummies, right?
When I look back and I thought, wow, that was really, I was really faking. In a way, I shouldn't have done it, but I couldn't help it. I just couldn't play well. And the other guy was like super fancy playing all these terrible guitar solos.
Okay.
I couldn't pass stuff. So
yeah, I learned that this summer that what we call a pacifier, you guys call a dummy to keep a kid from crying, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I jumped ahead a little bit. So
no, that's fine.
By the time you made a band, you had already gotten an electric guitar.
I had an electric guitar, which I also played at home, and I just plugged it into my stereo system.
In the stereo, so you didn't really have an amp.
No.
For stage, for the gigs, it was just a, confidence thing.
And this was probably like 1976. It's 1977. Just before...
76
just before
is when I graduated high school.
Oh, yeah, okay. We're probably not that far.
Yeah, we're pretty close now. When you got this Spanish guitar and then eventually electric guitar, did you start writing songs yet?
No.
Yeah.
No, writing songs, I wouldn't say I was writing songs, but I made stuff up.
Okay.
I just made up my own guitar ideas and stuff. And not like melodies, just chord things, like simple chord stuff. And I just played the same thing over and over for hours. It was really, sometimes I would fall asleep with my chin on it, you know, that kind of thing where you just play for hours.
I still do that.
Yeah.
I got a tour coming up, and Tad Falco has me learning 25 songs. And
you
I play it with the bass in my hands when I wake up. It's sort of like reading, you know. I break so many pairs of glasses because I conk while I'm reading. Luckily, the bass is a little stronger. Okay. So, Absolute Zero, they do a lot of gigs?
One.
One. Okay.
One gig at school.
And it was at school. What, like kind of a talent show or something?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't too serious. Okay. I mean, the first band that I felt that it was that I was in a serious band was the next band, but that band also only did one gig, and it was called Suspect Device. We've named it after a Stiff
Will. Oh, Stiff Will Fingers. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a great band, but it was we only lasted one gig, and then it was, you know, that it's that kind of thing where like it was all the members were so different from each other. There was no kind of real connection, and we wanted to play so many different kinds of music in the band that it didn't really work. But that one gig we played was great fun.
And where was that?
That was in a kind of youth club in London.
Okay.
In Cricklewood.
Cricklewood.
Cricklewood is an Irish Catholic area in northwest London.
Okay.
At that time,
they used to have like youth centers where kids could hang out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a place where they said, you know, we've got a little stage here and you can do it for nothing and you just don't charge anyone at the door.
Okay. Just do it for fun.
Yeah.
It's a great. Okay. So where do you go from here?
And actually,
did you use the guitar, or was it just a prop again?
Then I used the guitar, and then I had a, what did I have? Jesus, back then. I had a Watkins amp with a little copycat built into it. You know these echo units, the Watkins copycat. I had one of those, which I still have somewhere. And I can't remember what guitar I had then. But
was it the next electric guitar?
Yeah, but I really don't remember.
What happened to the first one?
It's a good question.
Okay. Sorry to ask. No, but from there, is there a third band, of course?
Yeah. But the third band was really, that was when I moved to Edinburgh.
Right, Scotland.
In Scotland. And I met this guy, Colin, who lives in Amsterdam still, and we're still very close friends, and we still do stuff together. Like, but that was like 1983 or something. And I met him at he was DJing, and he was playing amazing music, like music that I'd never heard before. And it was basically like James Brown, African music, Ornette Coleman. He was playing like a big mixture of stuff, and I said to him afterwards, what is all this stuff? I'd never heard anything like it. So he just lent me about 50 records, and I spent the whole summer listening to all those records.
So it was funk?
No, it was more like it was a lot of different things. No, there was no funk in it. With James Brown, I guess that's more soul. There was
you wouldn't call James Brown funk, huh?
No, I call him soul.
Okay. Over here, like they usually say, the first soul singer was a guy named Sam Cooke.
Okay, yeah, okay. I see what you mean. Yeah.
And Jim Brown, you know, he started as a drummer, so there's something about his music that's got that groove.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. For me, it was the really early James Brown that I always connected more with soul music, but in a way it is.
Yeah.
You're right, it's funk.
Well, funk was a... You know, it was a trippy word. It meant kind of dirty, you know?
Yeah.
And so it got brought in. And Mr. Clinton's probably made the most hay out of it. But
yeah,
I remember, because I grew up in Navy housing, you know, as a boy, and other sailors' sons turned me on to Jim Brown early. And they did call it soul.
Yeah. Did they?
Well, yeah, they did call it soul.
When he started, like, it was...
But
it was,
like there's a song, I think it's the most sampled, what's his name, Clyde Stubblefield, Funky Drummer. Funkier.
Yeah.
So maybe that word funky, I don't know. Anyway, this is getting off the sidetrack. So what you do, you start educating yourself to Jim Brown, to this kind of black U.S. music, right?
Yeah, a lot of it was black music, also a lot of African music, like King Sunny Ade and Fela Kuti.
Oh, yeah. And that way, I would say there's a big difference there.
Yeah, sure.
Although they're coming from the same place, because they develop differently, they are, I would say more minor, more bluesy kind of things with the U.S. one, and maybe a little more melodic with the African thing. both really interesting musics. I mean, for somebody to, get educated. I remember, for me, learning about the bass, R&B was really, that's another thing you can call it. You can call it R&B, right?
That's true.
Because in the rock and roll, especially with U.S. records, the lead and rhythm guitars were too loud. I couldn't hear the bass lines, too muddy. Not so much with the bass players over where you're at, though, because they mix them really loud. Yeah, a guy from, I think, close Edinburgh, Glasgow, Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from him. I mean, on Cream Records, you could definitely hear the bass. But you could hear it also on the Animals and Kinks and The Who, of course. Like DJ Butler, Trevor Boulder with Bowie. And I learned a lot from those guys. But the R&B guys back home here with James Jamerson and Larry Graham, because of the structure of the music, the guitar was more clipped, more trebly.
It was more of a rhythm.
Very heavy on the rhythm. Really heavy on the rhythm. That's interesting. So what did you do with that when after Colin lends you them records?
Well, I just spent the whole summer listening to them. There was also the Contortions in there, and I just thought, wow,
James
what
Chance.
Is this?
Yeah.
The record Bye.
I remember that.
Wow.
That was really wild. I got to see him. They came to the Second Mask up in Hollywood. And he was did you ever see any of the gigs? He was pretty combative in those days.
No, I was too young then. I wasn't too young. I just didn't. I think by then they may have already even stopped.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I wish I had seen it because I thought it sounded great. It was really
amazing. That stuff was very influenced by Jim Brown, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there was also a whole bunch of jazz stuff that I loved that he played, especially Ornette Coleman. There's one record called Science Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I heard that, I just thought it was a big mess, and I thought, nah, this isn't serious. But I just kept listening to it again and again, and eventually it just sounded incredible. And when I hear it now, it sounds so structured and formed, but at the time I thought it was complete and utter chaos.
Wow. So those
records really, they completely changed my musical horizon. Before that, I was listening like to Talking Heads and a bit sort of new wave stuff. So that was great. And then, Colin, we said we should try and play together. So we just started, I think the first time we got a group of people that we knew together and went into we found a rehearsal space in Edinburgh that you could rent from 12 midnight till 4 in the morning.
Yeah, we call that downtime.
Exactly.
It's more econo, right? It costs less money.
It was very cheap.
Yeah, because that's how we used to record on downtime. Same thing.
Great. And the greatest thing is after you've rehearsed like that in a room with no windows and you go outside and it's just getting light. That is so, it's so nice. That's really, I have a really fond memory of that.
And what did Colin play? Did he play guitar also?
Well, we played everything. At that time, actually, Colin had a bass. He had a really nice jazz Fender jazz bass, and he had a really lovely red Hofner Galaxy guitar. So they were both his instruments. He used to work in a bank, and he quit the bank. And with the money he got from that, he bought those two guitars and a record player and started listening to music.
Wow!
And so those two guitars were like the guitars that were in the rehearsal room that you could pick up at any moment if you wanted. And there were two big oil barrels and a drum kit. And then we had a trumpet and a sax. So we
oil
just
barrels? You mean kind of like Velvet Underground?
I don't know. You know, like the giant oil barrels that you bash with sticks and they're metal and they just make this kind of industrial sound.
Yeah. Scotty used one when the Stooges were called psychedelic Stooges. He told me about playing oil barrels. Yeah.
And it was great because it was just, we were just playing rhythmic stuff. We'd listen to all this African music and all this jazz music, and we just thought, okay, we play rhythms over and over again, and you play a very simple bass line on top. And slowly we figured that the songs where Colin played bass and where I played guitar worked the best. So that's how we ended up with our...
There were some more cats with you, right, playing the drums and stuff.
There was a drummer who was, by far, he was a drummer, so that was easy for him to decide to stick to the drums.
Yeah.
And then we had a saxophone and a trumpet. And the first band was called Volunteered Slavery, which was named after an old Roland Kirk song.
Right.
And then the singer and the saxophone player at a certain point left, split, and then we became Dogface Hermans. And that was the first band that, I mean, Volunteer Slavery, we started doing gigs. We played in Edinburgh. We did a minus track benefit and stuff. And then Dogface Hermans, we really started going further, like going traveling around.
Where did that name come from?
Dogface Hermans. It was a Frankenstein film where this woman, I think she was bitten by, she wasn't bitten by Frankenstein. It was a sort of mixture of Frankenstein and Dracula or something, I don't know.
The Wolfman? She was bitten,
she was bitten by something, and she said that she dreamt that her husband, whose name was Herman, was running around with the face of a dog, and she said, "I'm dreaming of Dogface Hermans," and we thought it was a great title.
Wow.
Very simple. But
okay, and that was an old-timey movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta check that one out.
I can't remember what it was called. I should ask Wilf, because Wilf, the drummer, he's got a photographic memory of these things. He remembers everything.
Okay, well, do you remember recording?
What?
This band records, right? Of course,
yeah,
there's Dogface Hermans albums.
Yeah, we recorded in Cambridge the first time in a studio, a friend of Wilf's. We recorded like four or five songs that were kind of half formed. We didn't have a clue what we were doing, but it was really exciting.
Yeah. How was that? So it was exciting.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was
the drummer had recorded. Will hadn't recorded before either.
I think only the drummer had recorded before, so okay. he seemed to quite know what was going on. But for us, it was an adventure. And it was also difficult. It was like sometimes you did something, you played the guitar and you heard it back and you thought, that doesn't sound anything like my guitar. And I had no idea how to explain to the guy to make it sound, that, I mean, you must have had the same experience.
Sure.
And then there was, actually, it's funny because there was a moment when we were touring with Dogface Hermans where we met John Robb in Manchester. And he said to us, "Have you ever heard the Minutemen?" And none of us had heard the Minutemen. And he said, "No, I don't believe it, because you guys sound like you've been listening to Minutemen records for like 2 years." And I said, none of us had ever listened to a Minutemen record.
Wow.
So we went and listened to them, and we were quite amazed, actually, because we'd heard a lot of stuff that...
Well, I got to tell you, really, I mean, the Minutemen were influenced by a lot of bands from the movement there over there. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, Pop Group and Wire and The Fall and Alternative Television. And you probably heard of some of them bands, right? I think both our bands were influenced by the same kind of people, maybe.
I mean, The Fall, for me, The Fall is the band that, when you hear a band, you can hear whether they like The Fall or whether they don't like The Fall.
Oh, yeah.
That's for me the dividing point of nearly any band, whether they've heard The Fall and whether they like it or not. To me, that band really, that really cuts. I also heard that band really, really early when I was like 17 or something. Total's Turns, the first record I heard of them. And I was amazed. I thought, I didn't know that you were allowed to put music like that on records. The guy just—it just seemed like completely shambolic but great. It sounded really threatening to me. Like after you listen to all this Led Zeppelin and super produced stuff,
to hear
something so rough, it was really threatening.
Especially Dragnet. I really like Dragnet, but that thing sounded like it was recorded on one of them cassette machines where you press the buttons with your fingers.
Yeah. It sounded like our practice tapes. Yeah.
That's a great album, though. Yeah, I even got to see them. They came and played in 1981, I think, in downtown LA with a band called Blurt.
Yeah, I know Blurt, yeah.
Okay.
Great. Wow.
And the false singer wouldn't look at us. He looked at the kick drum the whole time.
Yeah. Still does that.
Okay, so that's why I think maybe Dogface Hermans and Minutemen sounded similar. We were both influenced by similar bands, I think.
For sure, yeah. Also, The Slits and The Birthday Party were very
important. Oh, yeah, we like those guys, too.
Yeah.
Big time.
That's great.
I got to see both of those bands.
That's good.
The Birthday Party at the Roxy and Slits at the Whiskey. The Slits didn't have, I think Budgie was on the record, but when I saw him, the drummer was the Pop Group guy, Bruce Smith.
Oh, right, okay.
And then the Whiskey, they had Tracy Pugh on bass, but they didn't, Mick Harvey was on the drums, so they didn't have two guitars. It was just Roland Howard. But it was pretty amazing, both gigs.
Tracy Pugh and what was the name of the bass player from the Contortions? He had a George Scott the Third or something. He had a strange name.
Oh, yeah.
Those two bass players were probably the biggest, had the biggest influence on me and Colin, like musically playing. I mean, I didn't play bass, but when I heard the way they played bass, for me it was really like a revelation. And really catchy bass lines as well. Not just like backing up or something, really pushing the song and actually creating the song from the bass.
Which is a really big tradition in R&B. I was thinking of Mr. David Sims from Jesus Lizard. He was kind of a student of Tracy.
Oh, yeah?
Style of playing. Did you ever get to see the birthday party?
Yeah, I saw them. I saw them once in Edinburgh.
Okay. Did he have his cowboy hat on and the big grinding hips? And
Yeah,
he was quite a guy to see perform. I loved it.
Yeah. And the problem is that people still in 1983 or 82 maybe, and people were still spitting on the bands. So as soon as they started, they were covered in a shower of gold.
Oh, man.
And I could see that Nick Cave really fucking hated that. I think I've really had enough of this.
Yeah, the good old days.
And Roland Howard wasn't in the best of shape.
Yeah.
They were playing some new songs, and he just didn't know what he was doing. But as soon as they played a few older songs, he just transformed into this fucking amazing musician. So it seemed like that really triggered his muscle memory of something, I don't know. And it was great. He's really one of my favorite guitar players also.
Yeah, incredible style, and he's dearly missed.
Thank you. You know it does. The Clippers! Keep y'all down your bib. You know, you can always leave if you don't like what. Happening! Sitting by the dock of the bay.
Live from Pedro Show. We had part one of our October 7, 2015 interview with Andy Moore. Next couple hours, we'll have the next two parts. Following Andy in his incredible journey through music, hearing about it from him. We had him and DJ Rupture doing something called Inja Kohast Inya Iran Ast Zazamina Mano To. Which is some kind of art piece with an Iranian artist. Brand new from R04, Wave Transmission, the original mix. Glad to hear these guys back in action. Love them. Seaflu Lilac, Black Mouth Super Rainbow, Mr. Thomas and Trippiness, Lester Bangs, Let It Blurt. I can't believe I've never heard this before. Brand new from Yoppers, Deacon Brody. And many birthdays with Black Mountain Blue Sea. Many birthdays on the roll. But new material. That was the last show I did. It was actually in Austin, Texas. It wasn't after the gigs. It was there at Many Birthday Pad. JD and Sarah. Whole band, in fact. That was neat getting to talk with them. And those gigs, too, that... Jeff Smith put together. It's been over 20 years, San Antonio. You know, in Tacoma, Tamara, it's over 20 years since I played there. I remember it was Edward and Georgie, and I think the place was called New World Theater or something like that. And I remember most was across the street was some kind of gas station or maybe mechanic shit. It had a bunch of old 50s... T-Birds, the little two-seaters. But I remember the pad, too. It was like a little theater. Anyway, it'd be good to play in Tacoma again. Long time. And Rich King from Guitar Maniacs. Rick King. Yeah, that Jazzmaster Nels Kahn plays 59. That's where it came from. Via Jay Maskus and myself. And anyway, Nels loves playing that, and I'm glad to be part of it. Anyway, we're at the end of the first hour of the Friday the 13th, November 2015 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Good people, hold tight for hour two. Friday the 13th, 2015, November is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
after we landed and started moving inland, there was these rumors, these stories, of French women firing on our troops. I never saw one myself, but I was told there was this young woman who had had a German sweetheart. He'd gotten killed in the fighting. So she got up on a church tower and shot one of our guys with a Mauser. Then she was shot. I sometimes wonder about her.
Wenn der Krieg ein träges Land entflammt, ist die Leidenschaft nicht fern. Die Granate treibt den Granatapfelbaum, ach kostbar ist der Traum. Wo der Krieg durch brave Häuser geht, bringt der Liebesglück statt Brot. Wer allein war und reich, ist nun arm und gleich. Wie ein Reh nach der Trockenzeit kommt die Menschlichkeit zurück. Erst als Geist, dann als Glück, dann als krudes Geschick. Wer liebt, tut's bis zum Tod.
Thank you. Thank you.
For Pedro Show, start off the second hour with Dogface Hermans in a 1987 John Peel session doing Malcolm Plays Housey Housey. Then some brand new from Kimbaum and Kestner, Only the Living Can love, and then X blank X with You're Full of Shit. I think that's from 79. Cleveland. DJ Soda Yama Primary Colors Remix from Kyoka. There might be some white bass in there. Some digital distortion for sure. Good job, Miss Kyoka. Neto Milik with Osviesti. Say. Sorry for the bad slap, but I'm doing the bass there for sure. I remember. That's for Neto. Neto-san. He put me in there good. Excellent video. Istria workout camp. Shindiggers after that, Lost Cause live. Shindaggers, I'm sorry. They're like yucca plants when you ride your motorcycles. Cat in Flagstaff from the Taft Falco Panther Burn Tour. By the way, you can read the tour diary. It's up on the Hoot page. MikeWatt.com. Yeah, they didn't get to play. They're supposed to play after us in Flagstaff there at the Monte Vista Hotel. That was a crime. That was injustice and a half. And I think they're breaking up, too. Bullshit. Four Data Suicides, brand new from Edge Blur, her solo album. And finally, Taft Falco with Fire Island off Command Performance. This is one song we didn't do. We did do 25 songs. One Day to Prac 'em. Look, here's part two of that Andy Moore October 7, 2015 interview I did with him via Skype. He was starting a tour. I was starting a tour. But it was the time we could talk, so here it is.
Now, with Dogface Hermans, you guys started touring. First there, and then you probably got on the continent.
Yeah, we toured in England, Scotland for a while, and then the first time we went to Belgium, that was the first place we played in Europe, in Belgium. We did four gigs with Ut. Remember that band?
Yeah.
They were funny. Yeah. And the organizer, a guy called Alan Bowl, probably you know him as well. Really great guy. He's been booking gigs for, he has a radio thing called Some Noise. And he gave us like 100 tickets and said, here, this is for you. And we were like, what's that for? And he goes, that's for beer. You just give one of those tickets at the bar and you get a beer. And for us, we come from England.
Yeah.
And it's like what Marky Smith says when all the English bands act like kids getting free milk or something en route to the loo. We couldn't believe it. We thought, what? We can get all this beer? We can get 100 beers? And he goes, yeah, yeah. Because in England, you have to pay for your beer, for your food at that time.
Sure, like the US. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also didn't know how strong Belgian beer was. So, of course, we got completely shit-faced.
Okay.
After the gig. We were careful with that.
Okay.
But we were very naive, but it was great. And that's also, not long after that, we met the ex. We met the ex in Sheffield. We saw them playing in Sheffield, and that was like meeting your parallel brother from Holland. Like really, we also hadn't been listening to their music, and we'd never seen them live. But we seemed to be moving in this kind of parallel. And I guess it's what you said. You know, we listened to the same records.
Yeah, because Minutemen used to get compared with the ex too.
Yeah, yeah. We had a sort of same musical route then in that sense.
Yeah.
And the ex loved all these English bands as well. So it makes sense that we would end up, like, producing something kind of similar.
Did you guys ever come over here?
Yeah. Dogface came over. We did two tours in America. Once we did a 49-day tour. We didn't make it to 53. Well, we did 7 weeks in a circle around the States. So we played, like, Butte, Montana.
Butte, yeah.
Yeah, we played some great
places. You know what a Butte is? A Butte is a kind of, in Spanish you would say mesa.
A what?
Mesa table, yeah. Right? But it's like a big land that comes up. That's a Butte.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because this is great.
Maybe it's
great.
From French, you know.
Like, yeah.
Because the French guys were kind of more in the wilderness and stuff.
Yeah.
But Butte is it's one of the bigger towns in Montana, maybe 65,000.
Oh, okay.
But I think it might be might be the capital. Usually,
It is.
Yeah, usually play the college town, so Missoula and Billings. But you get to see a lot of the country.
Yeah, we played in Lincoln, Nebraska.
That's their capital. You did Capitals tour.
Yeah, I guess. And we traveled in a van. We cooked our own food each night, and we slept in people's houses. And that was really amazing. And then the second time we did a 5-week tour, and actually the last date of that tour was the last date of the band. It was in San Francisco, and we kind of stopped after that.
Wow, like Sex Pistols. they broke up in San Francisco.
Really? Well, we didn't break up there. We'd already planned it like a while ago. We didn't fall out or anything. Marion, the singer, she's an artist, and she wanted to go back to England and do art.
Okay.
And Colin just felt like he'd done what he wanted to do on the bass. Wilf just wanted to carry on forever and still does, and I think he's really sad that we stopped. I think he felt like we took this great thing away from him. And he's right, but there's nothing we could do about that. It wasn't like, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And I joined the X, which was great.
Okay, now how did that happen?
Well, I was already, because it's complicated. Dogface Hermits took a year off. Marion went, already she was starting to get back into her art. She went to Poland for a year to do a residency. So we took a year sabbatical. And in that year, the X invited me
to
play with them.
What year is that? What year is that, Andy?
1990.
Okay.
So I went to Holland really with the idea of playing with the X for a year. And for me, that was amazing to be invited to play in your favorite band.
Now, what happened? They had a space open?
No, not really. They were playing as a four-piece, and they knew how to play.
They wanted to expand?
And they just said, you know, come and play with us.
We want the quintet now.
We want more guitars.
Right, okay. Now, I was wondering, you weren't like filling in a hole, you were like helping the band expand.
Yeah. Okay. It was making it louder.
Make it louder.
More and more messy.
And this came, and you knew these guys by playing with them.
Yeah.
When they came to Sheffield, and then you started.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, one of the guys from Chumbawamba.
Oh, Leeds guys.
Yeah, they introduced us to the X, and they said, you guys, they're talking about you, and they're listening to your record when we go to their house in Holland. You've got to get together with them. And we were really, you know, then you get really excited. You think, wow! Because by then we knew who they were, and we really wanted to meet them and play with them.
Okay.
So it happened, you know, it didn't happen long after that.
But then you got invited to join the band. Okay.
And I joined the band for a year, and then Dogfest Hermits reformed after a year, but they relocated to Holland.
Wow.
Instead of me going back to Scotland, they all came to Holland, and we carried on for 4 or 5 years in Holland, and I sort of played
in both bands.
Well, for a bit I did, but that was kind of impossible. But at a certain point, the X started playing with Tom Cora, the cello player.
Sure, incredible yeah. Musician, man. That was a great loss to lose Tom.
Yeah.
He was amazing. I mean,
yeah.
Some of these, you know, a friend of mine, Bob Teagan in Detroit, he's got a bunch of films of that, what was it, Skeleton?
Skeleton Crew.
Crew with Mr. Fred.
Yeah.
I mean, the bass stuff with the drumstick and, the cello. And, I mean, the guy was amazing. Anyway, so you're involved in that part of the X with Tom. Okay.
Yeah. So that happened once or twice a year. We did a tour with that. The rest of the time, the X did the four piece. So I could kind of operate in both bands. And then once Dogface Herman stopped, then I just joined. Then I just went over and joined the X full time. But I'd continued to be playing with them the whole time. So it was a kind of natural transition. But playing with Tom was fantastic. He also brought us into another area of music. He started getting us, you know, these gigs in these improvised music festivals.
Oh yeah, avant-garde. Yeah.
And jazz festivals and stuff. Stuff that we'd never ever had any connection with.
Sort of like what's his name? Lower East Side sax man, John Zorn.
Yeah. Actually at that time John Zorn was playing a lot these festivals and draining the budgets of all these festivals.
You know, it was sad. It was kind of burned out. It was there wasn't a lot of future. I don't know. It seemed like a trough, and people should have been a little more careful with that, I think, looking back. But it's easy in hindsight to look back.
Yeah.
So all these influences on you. You know, I can hear it in your playing big time. There's a lot of stuff. You're a good listener, good interpreter.
Also with Dogface Hermes, we listen to also a lot of Greek music. You know this very old Rembetika music?
No.
Wow, that's a whole area you should dig into.
Cause how do you spell it?
R-E-M-B-E-T-I-K-A.
Okay. Rembetika.
And it's music from, I mean, the best, it covers quite a long period. It's from Greece, but the best period is 20s and 30s.
Are we talking bouzouki?
Yeah, it is played with the bouzouki, but also with the guitar. And okay. Actually, some of my favorite stuff is with a guitar rather than a bouzouki.
Okay.
And it's Greek refugees who were living in Turkey.
Yeah.
And they had to come back to Greece at a certain point when it split. The Christian Greeks had to go back to Greece, and the Muslim Greeks stayed in Izmir in Turkey. And they arrived in the port in near Athens. They were, all of them were kind of on hash, addicted to drugs. It was kind of underground guys, and they kind of went underground in the port and started playing this amazing music.
Okay, wow.
With really incredible lyrics and incredible. I mean, the songs are about TB, like tuberculosis, sure. Prison. You know, those kind of things.
Kind of like Greek blues.
Yeah, basically. And it went on for, the best stuff went on for about 20 years. It got cleaned up, and then you started getting virtuoso bouzouki players, and it became a bit slick. It became instrumental at a certain point because the words were too threatening.
Right.
And then you had the Greek fascist government, which really cleaned it up. So by the time it resurfaced in the 50s, it was beginning to sound touristy. And it ended up sounding like the Greek music you hear in the restaurants now.
Okay, yeah, that's what happened to flamenco too, huh?
Yeah, but the origin
is Disneyland it out.
Yeah, but the original music was very Turkish influenced, and it's dark, droney, beautiful songs. I mean, I'm not really into like miserable droney music, but I love this stuff, and I don't get depressed by it. It gives me incredible energy. And we were listening to that from quite early on with Dogface Hermes. We never really did any of that stuff in the band, but I think it really affected our. But it's what you're saying about if you listen to a lot of music from different areas.
Yeah.
Then when you make music, it's harder to define what your music is. It's not one thing. It's like there are so many influences. Also, with all the different musicians you play with, it becomes a personal. The X sounds like the X. It doesn't sound like it's not anarcho punk or punk anymore. It's just X music.
Yeah, well,
what else
this idea about punk having to be a style, I never understood that. To us, it was always a state of mind. You know, we learned by going to gigs in Hollywood. Some of them some didn't even have guitars.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Screamers. Sure. It was like anything. It's strange how that got. It got put in as a genre,
yeah.
Instead of more of a state of mind, you know, or a way of doing things. You know, at least, yeah, Jam and Econo or something, but this idea where you have to play very fast guitar to be a punk band, that's ridiculous.
Yes.
In my opinion, for other people, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so there comes a point when there's no more Dogface Hermes and you're just an X person.
And I was exhausted.
And you were tired. Where did it go from there?
To Mexico.
Okay.
After Los Angeles, after San Francisco, after the band stopped, I just went down to Mexico for a couple of months and just had a break, which was really amazing. And I also collapsed a bit there. I also physically was just tired because I was touring too much with both bands. And then when I came back, I was really fresh and ready to play again. So I started touring. I started playing with the X full time. And that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years, actually.
20 years, right? Yeah.
And I do other projects with the other musicians as well, but I mean the main thing that I do is still play with the X.
Thank you.
In my junior year of high school, I formed a band with a few girls called Born Naked. We agonized over band names, though clearly not for long enough, until our singer, Alexis, showed up with a naked picture of her mother when she was pregnant, and that was that. We made stickers, which felt more important than the music itself, and practiced at our drummer Rachel's house. Our amps were the size of shoeboxes. Most of our guy friends were in bands. We didn't take ourselves too seriously, almost as a means of warding off any potential criticism. If we thought of Born Naked as a joke, then no one could make fun of us. We were in on it. We got it. Our signature song was one I'd penned called You Annoy Me. Sometimes I think I have barely moved on from that sentiment. So much of my intention with songs is to voice a continual dissatisfaction, or at least to claw my way out of it. The lyrics.
Okay, Watt for Pedro Show. You heard part two, three, interview with Andy Moore, October 7, 2015 is when that happened, a little more than a month ago. Then we heard the X right after, when he started talking about playing with the X. Isn't that, something I got together. What's it called? A segue. Yeah. God, my mind. I'm still blurry, guys. And gals. Maybe I was the pilot of the X. The Ballad of Bull Ramos, Mountain Goats after that. Final Rainforest, Wharton Tears. Fart down in New York there. Coyote versus Mole, Earthworm Ensemble. Oh, yeah, the Mountain Goats. I guess, Carlos, after we did that wrestling spiel, thought I should know about that record. So it's got wrestling stuff or something. Too Much Elbow Room from A Whole Hump. And finally, You Annoy Me by Born Naked. Let's see. I got some gigs coming up with Second Man opening for X. Yeah, John Doe. Asked for 12 more gigs. You know, when we did the 4 in July in Orange County, I told Pizzo and Jerzo, I said, look, you get up on that stage quick and off quick and run your shit tight and no fucking belly aching, you see what happens. And sure enough, you know, very kind of them. And I think Billy's going to be on board for these gigs too. So we're doing a lot of prac. Prac later today. The prac I got coming right up, though, is a Missing Man one for tomorrow in Tacoma, like I was telling you about. And Rich King's going to have the guitars for me and Tom, so we don't have to fly up from there. That's what I was told. Either that or we borrow some from the opening band. It's been the second hour of the 13th Friday, November 2015, edition of Watt for Peter Show. Hold tight for hour three. Friday the 13th, November 2015. It's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Yanis Kirkidis and Andy Moore with Dead B. Then the Kings of Lower Town. It's out of Pembroke. Right up in Ontario. Grail of Sin. Zolar X, Bait Sage Love. I remember you see Zolar X's pictures at Pink's in the late 70s. That's when Dogs Johnny, a guy named Johnny, was slinging them there. They're $1.25. Me and my Pooklier friend Tone would drive all the way up from Pedro just to get their dogs. There was no line. Barbez after that was Shima Coley. And finally, Apologies, A Disgrace to Modern Science. Yes, out of Geordietown, Newcastle. Yeah, that's what's going on there inside their minds. Now, we got the last part of this Andy Moore interview I did with him via Skype, October 7th, 2015. Very interesting cat. Check out his music. He has lots of projects. Let him speak for himself.
And it's still fun.
And how would you say it was different now, being in the X, than 20 years ago? Well, obviously you were brought in back then. Now you're kind of one of the pillars.
Yeah, but that's a hard question to answer. It's almost the same as someone asking you, how are you different as a person than you were 20 years ago? Because it's happened so slowly and incremental, and it's not like the X. We never made these big sort of leaps where we'd suddenly changed everything we did or the way we did, because we really liked the way we were doing things and it was working. And so I think the X has evolved really slowly.
But I mean, there was, you know, for example,
I don't know.
No, but for example, like GSOC, I mean, some members came and left.
Oh yeah, that's true. Well, basically, no. From that point when I joined the X full time, Kat and Terry are still in the band, so the three of us have played together
all those 20 years, right?
It's 26 years.
Because you were in both bands for a period. Okay.
Yeah. And then Luke left 10 years ago.
But a couple years ago you got a new guy, right?
And then Jos left, that was already 6 years ago.
Wow, 6 years, wow. Because I remember at an Altamara's parties, I think it was one of the first gigs with you. God, it was that long ago, huh?
Which Altamara? We've been to a couple of them.
I've been to a bunch, too. I think this was one with Godspeed Ye Black Emperor.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That was about 3 years ago.
Okay, so it's further than that, further back.
So he's been in the band since 2007 or 8, I think, something like that, yeah.
So maybe one of the ones with Stooges. Yeah, it was a Minehead one, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that was great, Minehead. But I thought maybe he also was still in the band. I can't remember.
It's hard to remember. But anyway, the change in members, even though there hasn't been a lot of them, the band kind of changes up, right?
Yeah, and also we have projects with guests. We play with Ken Vandermark sometimes.
Right, those cats from East Africa.
Yeah, also we play with the Ethiopian musicians.
Yeah, right, right. That's
all of that. I always feel like that's changing us, but I don't notice it happening because it doesn't happen. It's like you when you have a conversation with someone, you adjust to their character and you work together to make something work.
Of course.
And afterwards, you're probably changed by that, but it's not always something that's evident or something. Probably when you look back, you notice it more. I mean, I saw a video that Jem Cohen made of us playing in New York from 1999.
Yeah.
And we were jumping around like really full on, much, much more than we are now. But for me, the music we play now is more intense. So it feels to me like we put our energy more now into the intensity of the music and less to do with running around, and that's also, I guess, a bit to do with age, I'm sure. But it's not only that. It's really it's to do with. I guess it's just a gradual development that you know. I'm not we don't. We never really sat down and had a strategy for that. It was really
What about your other other collaborations, like with that keyboard guy, that synthesizer guy?
Keyboard guy.
Or synthesizer guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Just a moment. I think you guys did some recording for sure. You did some gigs. Yanis
Kiriakidis.
Yes.
Oh, but that wasn't with the X.
No, that's just you and him.
That's a project I do. That's where we do this Rembetica stuff. This
okay, because it sounds like his name is kind of Greek, right?
Yeah. That's he was the first guy I met in Holland who knew about that music.
Okay.
And actually, we started playing together because of that. He's actually a classical composer. He really writes music. But the project that he does with me, I think he also does it to get away from that whole... I think he loves doing that in that world, but I think he likes also to be able to do something more spontaneous and free on stage, and that's what we do together, like... And I think for him, it's really a challenge because it's hard work to work with this. Also, I'm playing along with the machine, which is not easy.
Yeah.
But he's very responsive, and he's not just playing loops and simple beats. He's actually really working with me and changing and reacting. So it actually works. That's not easy to do.
Do you got a lot of collaborations like that going?
I have that one, and I have one with a French sound poet called Anne-James Chaton, and he's amazing. I have to send you a link of him. It'd take me ages to. We played last night in Lille. We did like 13 pieces. We played for about an hour, 10 minutes. It was great. And he has great. Each song is a really strong idea, and he reads. He just reads in a very low monotone voice, and I make a mixture of. A sort of backing track of sounds and rhythms, and then I play guitar on top of it as well, live.
Live. Well, what about this? I saw a collaboration, or I heard it, with a DJ.
DJ Rupture.
Yeah.
It's great. He's from Brooklyn.
Okay.
He's great. He hasn't been playing recently. He's writing a book, but he had a period in the sort of 2007s, whatever you call those, the 2010s, and he was playing with three turntables and really playing like three different songs at the same time and mixing them so that they became something else, and it wasn't a mess. It worked really great.
And he
was part of that sort of breakcore scene that happened at that time.
So your collaborations, you're not looking like for other bass and drummers, rhythm sections. You like these guys that are far from like the rock and roll band kind of thing.
Yeah, but no, that's really happened by chance that I've ended up playing with those three.
Not on purpose, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is purposeful, but it was because I heard them and thought, wow, this is great. I want to try and play with that, right? You know, and it's true, sometimes you see
that's happening. That's the best reason. Yeah. Not be convoluted.
We have a project with me and Terry and Ken Vandermark. You know, Ken's coming with us on this trip to the States, Ken Vandermark. Okay. We have a quartet also, me, Terry, Ken, and Paul Nielsen Love, who's this incredible Norwegian drummer who sounds like about five drummers playing at the same time.
Wow.
And that's really, we don't plan anything.
Billy Cobham.
Yeah, he's really into him and Elvin Jones.
I saw Elvin many, many times. Raymond Pettibone
really?
Would bring me, because he lived in Nagasaki, so he would always stop here first. But I got to see Billy Cobham with the Mahavishnu Orchestra once when I was a teenager.
I think you'd really like Paul Nielsen Love's drumming.
You got to turn me on to some of that music. What are your plans for the future after this tour?
To look after my son.
Okay.
He's two.
He's only 2 years old.
Yeah, wow. I started late. I don't know. I mean, I've never had plans for the future. I didn't know I was going to join the X, and I didn't know I was going to stay in the X for 26 years. I want to keep playing music, and I'll keep finding ways to do that. But it's not like I have big strategies. Okay. I follow my instinct. I think the X works like that as well.
Well, that's quite all right. You know, I just asked that because
it's fine.
I'm curious.
And we
it's all right, you know, steady as she goes, as we say, you know.
Yeah,
and look, I ask everybody this on the show.
Sorry?
I ask everybody this at the end that okay. I have on the show. What would your advice be to somebody just getting into this endeavor?
Of music.
If you want to call it that.
Okay. I think the main thing is just play. Don't, like what we were talking about earlier, don't try and play some kind of style of music that already exists, and don't define yourself as a punk band or a hardcore band. Just get together with a group of musicians. You're all different people, and play music together and let it happen a bit without sort of forcing some kind of shape or style on it. Just develop your own style and your own character. Because if you think of all the bands that we like bands that sound different. We like bands that have personality and sort of character in there. It's nothing to do with virtuosity. And of course, you have to be able to put two chords together. But even that, I'm not convinced to do.
I don't know. TVI has one chord.
Yeah, exactly. I like music. I don't care if it's not well played. I care more about the character of the sound, and that's. And I think the Fall were the first band that really blew my brain with that, because I could not believe how clumsy they were and how much I liked it. And I just thought, this is different music from all this other music I've been listening to. And I don't know how bands, you know, that when they start together, they must also feel overwhelmed by the fact that there's 57 million bands and they're all getting on Spotify and all trying to get attention. So I can imagine it's quite a daunting thing. I mean, we started at a time when none of that existed, so we have a bit of a identity and a bit of a place in all of this, but it must be hard for all these musicians now. But
might be hard, but I think it's worth it there, Andy.
Totally. And they've just got to be into it. There's no, I mean, it depends on your motive of why you're playing in the band.
Right.
People have many different reasons.
Well, I think what you're saying is really good stuff, and I can learn from it. Thank you. I want to thank you very much, too, for being on the show, and I want to wish you good luck. Safe seas on your upcoming tour.
spot for Pedro show. There you have it, the third and final part of October 7, 2015 interview between myself and Andy Moore. Andy Moore info, obviously with the X. You can go to the internet, www.theex.nl. That's X's website. You know, over 20 years, Andy's been with him. You know, I just got to do a spiel with V Vail. After the last gig of this Tal Falco tour up in San Francisco, and the same thing, talking with that man. It was like, no doubt in my mind why me and D Boone got involved with the movement. People like this. Just incredible and profound influence on us. People like Raymond Pettibone, and of course all the bands in the old days that we saw, like Bags and X and Germs and Dills, Alley Cats, to ones we played with like Black Flag and Meat Puppets and Husker Du and Sacred Trust, to ones we only knew from records like Pop Group and Wire and Alternative Television in the Fall. Richard Hell and the Voidoids. I remember putting a picture of Richard Hell on my face. Anyway, let me tell you about the music after Andy. We heard This Thing by American Werewolf Academy. Got to play with them in Dallas at the Three Links. Great club in Deep Elm there. St. Peter's Bones intro, a rough mix from Labor Camp. Yeah, that's Kurt doing new stuff with Paul. Case brother. And then Ava Mendoza, Feral Twin. Incredible guitarist, Ava Mendoza. Much respect. And Mr. Napster, Tuvax, Italian Cats, part of that jazz core thing. Mr. Napster, that sounds like an acronym, huh? No, not acronym. What's over? Something from anachronism or something. I'm stupid. Anyway, I want to thank Andy Moore for being on the show. Even though that was, 6 weeks ago, I hope his tour was good. I had an incredible experience. Like I said, you can read about it on the Hoot page. Looking forward to playing with my own trios, though. Second Man and Missing Man coming up to finish up 2015. 2016 for Watt. I got to get 4 albums done. So no touring in the spring for me. Just, I wish I could, but time won't let me. You've been listening to Friday 13th edition of November 2015 Love from Pedro show, fucking it up. Be with Brother Matt next time. Everybody, keep your powder dry.